Welcome to the coffee table. I'm your host, Kathleen Gustafson. The time is 9:04 a.m. And in the studio, Borough Mayor Mike Navarre and Kenai Peninsula Borough President Kelly Cooper. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Kathleen.
I really appreciate you coming in. And the topic today are the borough propositions for Election Day coming up October 3rd. Which is soon, which is Tuesday.
Tuesday's election day, yep. And yep. The polls are open now if you want to go vote early.
And I would like, well, first of all, Mayor Navarre, I would love to hear, like, how many times have you made this presentation? You have been out sharing this information for some time.
You know, I did some actually last year on the subject, and this year we tried to make a conscious effort to get to all the communities several times, and I've done a number of them, and Larry's done a number of them. So in total, I think we've done about 20 different presentations to different groups, and I think this is the last one that we have before the election. So I hope the word's gotten out. I hope folks have taken the opportunity to educate themselves on the ballot propositions and make informed choices.
Well, thank you for making this a stop on your tour. We appreciate it. If you have any questions for Mayor Navarre, the number to call is 235-7721. Or if you're outside of the calling area, it's 1-800-979-5224. And if you don't feel like hanging on the phone, you can email your questions to info@kbbi.org. And we'll be taking questions all hour, so call at will. But Mayor Navarre, let's start with, can we just go right down the line? Propositions 1, 2, and 3, or you present this however
well,
you like.
Our focus is really on Proposition 2 and 3. Proposition 1
well, let's
was...
let's start with those then.
Okay. Proposition 2 is HVAC, the upgrade to the heating ventilation system at the Kenai Borough. The borough building is almost 50 years old. It has the existing and original boiler system, and it's antiquated. It's tough to get parts for it. And oftentimes in the middle of winter, it is so cold in the building that literally maybe half the offices have little space heaters. And it's inefficient because it uses up additional energy resources when you have electric heaters under half the desks. And it really affects productivity, too. That building is cold, extremely cold sometimes in the winter. And in the summer, it's too hot. Now, this summer, it didn't get too hot too often, so it wasn't too bad. But when it does get hot, they leave windows open, they leave doors open. It can create a issue of security because sometimes they're left open at night inadvertently, even though we have a janitor who goes around and makes sure that things are locked up. It still can be a security issue for the building.
Space heaters are also, not only are they inefficient, but they can be a safety hazard.
They are, and I'll tell you a little story of when I was mayor in the 90s, because I was mayor from 96 to 99. The issue was, it was an issue then. The HVAC needed to be upgraded back then, and I had a space heater that I borrowed from the attorney's office, and it was one of the older ones. It actually shorted out and caught on fire. Now, there's newer models of the space heaters, the smaller little heaters that are better protected. If they tip over, they have shutoffs and things like that. So the hazard is not as great as it was, but it's still significant. More importantly, when you have that many space heaters, it's going to affect the capacity of the building and start having issues with drawing too much power and creating surges and other. The bigger problem, though, is if that system goes down in the middle of winter, there is no good alternative. And what that means is that we probably end up paying more for it if we have to do it in a crisis mode rather than if we plan for it in an organized fashion. And what we're planning on doing is doing it over a three-year time frame so that we can sort of condense people into different spaces in the building, not have so many people displaced, not have the public having to go to different places around the community in order to interface with the borough government. So it's going to be done over a three-year period. It's going to be done in an organized fashion, and then we're either going to bond for it or take on debt from maybe one of the state agencies if it's available at the right rate.
And the bond, will it require another election, another vote?
No, because this authorizes us to bond or take on debt. And the reason we put it on that way is that we may not want to go out for bond. It's $5 million. It's not a huge bond issue. And we may just want to borrow the money from the Alaska Housing Authority or Energy Authority or one of those if they have it for energy upgrades.
And what have there been estimates for, well, you said $5 million. Oh, is that, that's over 3 years?
Well, total is $5 million. It's probably 5.1 is what the estimate was, but we think we can get it done for $5 million. And we did it by looking at a different system and a different way of phasing it in. The original estimate was in excess of almost $8 million. But we've figured out that, look, we need to try to do this as efficiently as we possibly can and present it to the voters and see if we can be authorized to go forward with it. I did have $1 million in the budget this year, but it was removed by the assembly with the idea that we'd go out and ask voters for the whole project to borrow funds for it. And the cost of to taxpayers will be about $14 for if your house is worth $200,000 or your property is worth $200,000, it's about $14 a year. And it'll be paid off over probably about a 10-year period. That's what we're looking at doing. And so it's not a lot of money. It's an investment in a building that's been there for almost 50 years. And if we do the right thing and make sure that we properly maintain it and upgrade it from time to time, we get a long time use out of that building. So it's a protection of our asset is part of what the rationale is for this.
And have you made studies about if this proposition, this is Proposition 2 we're discussing right now, if it fails, the cost to the city in efficiency?
There'll be some efficiency savings, energy efficiencies, if we can get the project done. It's not enough to pay for the project, but it'll help offset some of the costs.
Also, waiting, often costs don't go down.
No.
So if you wait, the cost will go up.
Absolutely. As I've said, if this doesn't pass, then we're going to have to figure out some way to do it anyway. It's not something that you can put off until it finally collapses and then you're doing it in a crisis mode and it costs you more. It's not responsible to do it that way. It's getting harder and harder to find parts for the systems that we have in place now in that building. And so it needs to be upgraded. It's the responsible thing to do, and it's something that's been avoided for a long, long time. And we need to step up and try to get it done.
And what kind of comments have you been getting, good response, when you're talking to people about this?
You know, I have been getting really good response. When we talk to people about it, they recognize that older buildings need to be upgraded. They need to, and we've done it with our schools, you know, from time to time. That's something that we need to do. We have a whole bunch of facilities that are owned by the borough, which is the people of the borough, and we need to make sure we take care of them. And people recognize that, and it's been pretty favorably received. I'm cautiously optimistic that that it'll pass.
And any comments or criticisms you've received that helped, that made you look at it in a new way?
Well, I guess the biggest criticism that I've heard from time to time is that, well, you should have been putting money aside for this instead of asking to borrow money or bond. But here's the reality of that. We our fund balance just a few short years ago was $28 million. Now it's down to 21, and it's trending downward because we're spending more money on an annual basis, which is the next proposition that we're going to talk about. And so we did have money set aside. We could have used money of the fund balance to do this, but we made a decision instead to support education at a higher level. And because of that, and we didn't raise taxes, then it means that the funds that we maybe could have used for this were used for a different purpose. And that's the problem oftentimes. Since we don't have dedicated funds, it's difficult to set money aside. Whenever there's money set aside somewhere, someone else may come along with a different idea or a different attitude. And even if you set money aside, they might choose to use it for something else in either a crisis situation or a priority of spending decisions.
And Borough President Kelly Cooper, I see you over there nodding your head. We are going to bring you into this discussion, especially when we start talking about Proposition 3. But feel free to jump in anytime.
I will. Thank you very much.
Okay. And I would like to talk a little bit about Proposition 3 now, unless you feel like there's something unsaid on Proposition 2?
No, I think Proposition 2 is pretty straightforward. Right. We've got the cost down as low as we think we can, and it's something that we need to do in order to protect the asset that belongs to the borough.
Well, the borough certainly has a lot of practice cutting budgets, so I'm sure that's true. If you have any questions or any comments about Propositions 1, 2, or 3, we're on 2 right now. We're headed to 3 soon. You can call 235-7721 or 800-979-5224. Or you can email info@kbbi.org. And let's move on to Proposition 3. But first, I'm going to ask this. Maybe this will lead us there. This question just came in from info@kbbi.org. Starting in January of this year, the collection of sales tax from nonprofit retail sales such as thrift stores was implemented. What has been the revenue from that? Can you talk about that? Has it been substantial?
You know, I could talk about that. There's a small bump that comes from that. It just seemed like it was the right thing to do because of competition with nonprofits competing directly with for-profit entrepreneurs. It doesn't make sense to give one of them a competitive advantage by not having them collect sales tax. Now, those nonprofits don't pay sales tax on purchases of goods and services that they use for the nonprofit. It's just that if they're running a thrift store or a gift shop,
right,
that they collect that and then remit it. So it makes sense. And I don't have that number off the top of my head.
When will those numbers be available to people?
Well, the numbers would be available. I think that because some of them were, we do our reporting on a quarterly basis. And so after every quarter, we report those numbers, and I can ask the finance director if they've segregated those. I'm sure we can break it down, but oftentimes we want to be cautious. If there's only a few of them, we don't want to disclose by telling how much a specific tax collectors or taxpayers,
Why not?
Businesses. Well, because, for example, we had the issue come up about someone wanted to know how much we had collected so far from cannabis sales.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time that the quarterly report came out, we had only had two that were in business. So if you disclose that, then there's two businesses that people can know exactly who those businesses were and what their sales were. And that's not something that we should disclose, and we don't disclose. So as we get more, then we can disclose the amount, and people can try to figure out where exactly it's coming from, how much sales one entrepreneur or retail outlet has versus another. But we don't provide that information about the people who are collecting sales tax on their sales. It's not right to disclose that information.
And if I may, Kathleen, I'd like to add a little bit on the when we quit excluding the nonprofits. I spent a great deal of time with the nonprofits in the Southern Peninsula last year helping them understand the new system and how that would work. And many of them did not understand that all of our sales tax goes to schools. So once they understood that, they were more open to it. And when we look at the nonprofit sector, we're also looking at the chambers of commerce, we're looking at gift shops. And so as I made the rounds to all of those organizations, they were much more open to that. And we did make changes where we still have exemptions for education nonprofits. So I think that we did a really good job in tweaking that, and all of those sales tax dollars are dedicated to our school funding. So,
and another thing that I discussed with the assembly is that in implementing it, our goal is to make sure that people who now have to collect that sales tax do it properly. We're not being punitive. If they've done something wrong and made mistakes and we identify them, we're not hammering them with penalties and interest. Our goal is to make sure that they understand it going forward as we're working our way through implementation. We're being very tolerant and I guess easy to work with to make sure that we're not penalizing people for making mistakes, because it is a new something new that they're doing that if it's not fully understood, we want them to understand it and get it correct going forward, not try to penalize them for the past mistakes.
And thank you to the person who emailed the question at info@kbbi.org. So we ready to move on to Proposition 3? Because it's a little meatier.
It is quite a bit.
Okay. I've got it right here in front of me. Amending KPB 5.18.430 to increase the maximum amount of sales subject to the borough sales tax to $1,000, except for residential rentals subject to voter approval. Correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so what does all that mean? Let's. I'm very interested because I have read this through a few times. And let me just tell everyone that if the source material is there at kpb.us on the assembly page, on the clerk's page, directed.
It is, and it's also available on the borough homepage under Hot Topics.
Good.
The flyers are available there that explain both of the Proposition 2 and Proposition 3. And so I encourage you to go take a look at it, at those flyers, and inform yourselves about the issue and make an informed vote. And I obviously will tell you why we're doing it and what the effect is. Currently, our sales tax code, which was adopted in 1965, has a cap of the first $500 in sales is taxed. Now, it's never been adjusted since 1965. And if you correct for inflation over that period of time, it's something like that number would be adjusted to $3,800.
It's never been adjusted since 1965.
It's never been adjusted. It's been a $500 cap ever since then. And
the year of my birth. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, and so all we're asking for is a slight increase of $500. So now the tax would be collected on the first $1,000 of a sale. So if you're buying a vehicle or buying a snow machine, it's only the first $1,000 that's going to be taxed. And if it's inside the city sales taxes would apply to it also. But for the areas outside the city, well, let's assume it's a borough outside the city's in a borough, and it's a $2,000 sale. Your tax would go up from what would currently be on a $2,000 sale, only the first $500 is taxed. So 500 times 3% is $15. If it goes up to $1,000, the tax on it would be $30 now for the borough. And it all goes to education, and it raises about $3.6 million for the borough. And we need to do that because currently our existing budget is about $4 million out of balance. And it's out of balance for a variety of reasons. One, we've seen state cuts in the last 5 years to revenue sharing. That's about $1.8 million a year. We also, a few years ago, reduced or increased the residential property tax exemption from $20,000 to $50,000. That costs the borough on an annual basis $1.3 million. And so we've done tax decreases over time, and now we've made some spending decisions on education a few years ago and sustained that over the last 3 years. And the result of it is that our fund balance is dwindling. We're deficit spending on an annual basis. You can do that in the short term. That's what fund balances are for. But you have to correct it in the long term. And so that's what we're asking, is allow us an additional tool to help close that fiscal gap and match revenues on an annual basis with expenditure decisions on an annual basis.
And if you have any questions or comments about Proposition 3 or any of the props on the ballot, or frankly, anything that you'd like to ask Borough Mayor Mike Navarre, call 235-7721 or email it to info@kbbi.org. If you're outside the local area, it's 800-979-5224. So go ahead, Kelly.
So the one thing I would like to add on this is, as I've been out speaking to the community, the comments that may not be accurate are the suggestion that we are overspending. And that's not the case. We our revenue is declining. I'd like the mayor to just briefly talk about the efficiencies he found in our budget this last year. He's worked very hard to reduce our budget and find efficiencies where he can. And I was very impressed by the total number that we found in efficiencies. Could you talk about that for a minute?
I'll be happy to. That's been something that we've reported to the assembly over about the last 4 years. It was an initiative of Paul Ostrander, my former chief of staff, to find efficiencies within the department and then work to make those efficiencies or achieve those efficiencies the best we can. And there have been millions of dollars that we found in efficiencies and implemented. And some of it's cost avoidance, some of it's actual savings. We've also made some decisions in conjunction with the assembly. We combined two departments into one, and we eliminated a director position and two other positions. So we eliminated three positions in doing so, and it saved a couple of hundred thousand dollars a year.
What are they?
Well, we had a purchasing and contracting department, and we also had a capital projects department, and they both work sort of hand in hand a lot. And so we combined them. We eliminated one of the directors. We eliminated one of the project managers because we don't have as many projects that we're managing. We haven't gotten as many capital grants from the state over the last
several years. There are fewer to get, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so we eliminated one of the clerks' position and combined a one clerk position, two positions into one, because it was when we combined the departments, it made one position available. And we did it by attrition, meaning as those positions became vacant, we eliminated the positions, and it had substantial savings. We also did something that was a little bit controversial, but it was a savings, I guess. We closed down the solid waste facilities one day a week on Sundays, and you know, it saves the borough a couple of hundred thousand dollars on an annual basis. And solid waste is one of our bigger expenses. And I've heard people say, well, gosh, that's the day I went to the landfill or went to dump my trash at the transfer sites, and now they're closed. Well, you know, oftentimes when you're looking for efficiencies as a business person, for example, and if you can do the same volume in 6 days rather than seven and have minimal impacts to the customers you're serving, you should do it, because from a business standpoint, it helps your bottom line. Same thing is true in this case for the borough. If we can save some money by, and it's a little bit inconvenient, yes, it's not open during the winter months, for 7 months during the winter, that's closed on Sundays, a little bit of an inconvenience, but it saves money for the borough and for the taxpayers, and that was what the goal is. And so we've done those types of things in order to make sure that we recognize that the state's in a contraction. We've seen impacts coming down from state cuts to local governments and other cost shiftings. And so we try to recognize that and make sure that we set ourselves up and are prepared for additional impacts that we're likely to see.
Now, the Proposition 2, upgrading the building, and Proposition 3 on the sales tax cap, they were initiated by the borough,
right?
But Proposition 1 was not, is that correct?
Proposition 1 was not. It was a petition that was put together, and a citizens got the signatures and managed to get it on the ballot, and so it's up for a vote also.
So we're going to get to Proposition 1 after it's time for our short break, and if you have any questions, we will still happily revisit. Oh, stand by. We will still happily revisit Proposition 3 because I want to dig a little deeper into it. But you can call and ask on any subject, 235-7721, or email info@kbbi.org. Mayor Navarre?
You know, I just wanted to talk, if we have a little bit of time,
we've got time,
about the idea that somehow borough spending is out of control and that's why we need this. That's not true. About two-thirds of the borough general fund budget goes to education, for debt service for education, for operations for education, and goes to the school district. So,
wall is really there. Money doesn't get borrowed out from there or used in other places?
Oh, no. Once it goes to the school district, actually, we lose the authority for it. Once we've given it to the school district, it's within their purview, and they get to make determinations.
It's part of their budget, then.
Right. And so when people talk about education and wanting to make changes to education, they talk to assembly members, they talk to me, I encourage them. The school board and the school district does a very good job of going out and engaging the citizens of the Kenai Peninsula Borough. They do hearings on the budget. They have work sessions on the budget. That's the time, and they have meetings, and that's the time that you need to go in and offer the school board and the school administration your recommendations, because the assembly, by law, doesn't get to make those determinations. We just determine how much money we give them. They determine how it's spent. So if you want changes there, you have to do it through that form. But we also, Kelly talked about it a little bit in terms of this idea that somehow we're growing out of control. I put some information together about what's happened since 2000 in the borough. And population's gone up 17%. Inflation has been 39%. So inflation and population's 56%. Over that period of time, the total borough budget's gone up 42%. So it's gone up less than inflation and population. And again, most of that, a good portion of that has gone to education increases because it's our highest expense, but it's our biggest and most important responsibility because kids who are in school now don't get another chance to go through school. So if we cut back on services to them and their educational opportunities, it's going to affect them for the rest of their lives. And so it's something that I think we need to take seriously. We do take seriously, and it's clearly a priority.
And it's not, they're not swimming in money over at the school district either. I've heard my reps tell me that when they meet, they're there to find another way to cut the budget.
Right, and it's showing up in terms of increasing the pupil-teacher ratio and things like that that have effects in the classroom. And so they take their job and their responsibility seriously, and the school board really does, and the school administration does work at it. The total number of borough employees since 2000 has grown 2%, and that's really two people. And because in our general government budget, we have about 100 employees. 102. It's gone up two people over that period of time, in spite of the fact that we've taken on additional responsibilities, we've seen population increase and things like that. So, and the property mill levy has gone down over that period of time by 44%. In 2000, the mill rate for the borough was 8 mills. Now it's 4.5. And I proposed increasing it to 5 this year. So I did present a balanced budget to the assembly. And when I was out and about last year talking about increasing the cap on sales, because it was on the ballot last year also. And I encourage people to consider it, because if it didn't pass, it would likely mean a mill rate increase. And sure enough, when I came into the budget this year, I proposed a mill rate increase because that's what it took in order to balance the budget on an annual basis. And the assembly turned it down. They didn't want to raise the mill rate, and we talked about different options that we would use going forward. We talked about a bed tax, and that was debated vigorously before the assembly, and there was some opposition to it, but there was some support for it. And at the end of the night, it did not pass. And so we needed something as a backup, and so we decided with assembly approval to put this back on the ballot this year. They appropriated some funds so that we could print up the brochures and then I've gone out with my chief of staff, Larry Pursley, and talked at a lot of different forums in order to try to educate on this issue, because it's an important issue. And if it doesn't pass, I think it either means a cut to education, because education, again, is 2/3 of our budget. And so it's either a cut to education or it's going to manifest as a mill rate increase, because the assembly, the fund balance is deteriorating fast enough now that we can't wait. And people say, well, why do you need a fund balance? What fund balance does is oftentimes we don't get our federal receipts or our state receipts at the beginning of the year, and we don't even get our tax receipts. So we use money from fund balance until the tax receipts start rolling in. Also, if we have a natural disaster, a flood, a fire, or something that affects borough assets, or then we have to upfront that money. Eventually, we'll get it back, but there's a documentation process for both the state and, if it's a federal disaster declaration, that you have to go through. Or in the case of a fire for a school building or a borough facility, then we have to wait for insurance and the documentation and the negotiations, et cetera, et cetera. So you don't want to put yourself in a poor negotiating position by having to take what they offer because you don't have any reserves to fall back on while you're working your way through those issues. So fund balances are important. It's also important to make sure that when we go out and borrow money, either by bonding or otherwise, that we are able to show that we're in financially good shape, that we have a fund balance, that we are able to sort of work our way through ups and downs in economic cycles. Because as I said, you can use your fund balance in the short term, but you've got to balance it over the long term. Expenditures on an annual basis should be matched by revenues on an annual basis.
Well, I see an opportunity for color commentary here, Borough President Kelly Cooper. I think maybe it's time for our bi-yearly explanation of what a mill rate is. Can you help people understand what that is? It has to do with property taxes, is that correct?
That's exactly right. There's a formula that's determined for your mill rate, and it's 1/100th isn't that correct, Mike? 1/100th per $100.
Of value,
assessed value. And so when we talk about, so our mill rate is low, and it has remained low for quite a while. And when we talked about our budget sitting on the assembly, I sponsored the sales tax cap last year, and there were many items on the ballot, and it didn't pass. And I didn't support the mill rate increase just simply because there is new modeling that occurred at the assessed values for the assessing department in the Lower Peninsula. And that was because it was the Southern Peninsula's turn to have the assessors here. I really, really went out of my way to make sure that we assisted people with their appeals, and the mayor got the board of adjustment down here so they could have the hearings here. And so I just, in good faith, could not support a mill rate increase after the large assessment increases. And I have to tell you, I've had people literally say that we had our budget and we told the assessors to meet that budget, and that is not the case. They are mandated by state statute on how they do their assessments, how their modeling works. And the modeling was new, and people's assessments did go up. And
boy,
and
did they ever. We had a terrific meeting here in Homer about that.
Right, and you know, and I'm sensitive to that, and I understand that, and that's why I couldn't support that mill rate increase this year. But what I have told people is I've been out visiting with them about the sales tax cap increase. If we don't pass that, you know, we also, the thing that we're not speaking about is we have an increasing senior population. And so that exemption continues to grow. And
that was
and
my next question. Who is exempt from this?
Right. And well, so the seniors, they have their exemptions. And last year we actually had a really nice STEP program. And I'm not sure that people completely understood that, because they thought the ones that had it were going to lose that. And we really, really worked hard to help educate people on that. So with our increased senior population, that's additional revenue that we're losing. So if this doesn't pass, I do have to support a mill rate increase. I couldn't do it this year just based on my constituents in this area having that increase. I do support the model. I understand that the modeling was new, and I understand their frustration. But as we move around the peninsula and visit those communities, that modeling will be applied to the entire borough.
How far has that model been applied so far? Is it still only in Homer?
No. It's
yeah. How far has it gotten?
Well, it's been done in other areas. It's I know that in Sterling and some of the others where we did it last year, it was applied. And you know, with this idea that we have a new model, by law, we have to assess at full and true value. That's what we have to do. And for a long time, especially raw land, has been under-assessed. I mean, it's easy to say, I guess, that it's been under-assessed. That's my opinion that it's been under-assessed. And it's also, I think, the opinion of a lot of people. If you look at borough values and offer somebody the borough assessed value, a lot of people are not going to sell for that, because the market value may be higher than that, but we're supposed to try to assess at full and true value. It's not something that's discretionary to the assembly or the mayor to tell the assessor to go out and raise assessments. It's a process that we go through, and because the borough is so big, you have to keep in mind that the Kenai borough is about the size of West Virginia, and we're spread out over a large area, and so we don't want to hire enough assessors to go out and be able to do it every single year in every single area, because then the assessing budget would go up by five times. What we try to do is try to get to a five-year cycle, and it's probably a little bit more than that, maybe like a six-year cycle, where we touch every area of the borough over that period of time, and it rotates. So last year it was Homer was scheduled for assessment. The year before it was in Seward. And when we do, there's a process in place to appeal those assessments in order to make sure that we get it right. And the borough's hamstrung a little bit because we're a non-disclosure state for real estate.
That was my next question, is how do we get people to share this information?
Well, the way we get people to share the information is when they do appeal because they think their value is too high. And occasionally, we get people who will appeal because they think their value is too low. Mm-hmm. And they bring in the information, or they say, look, I had my house up for sale, and it hasn't sold. I've had these offers. They get an appraisal, an independent appraisal from a certified appraisal company to say, look, here's what I had it appraised at. And that all that information, or we send out surveys to say, voluntarily. We know you sold your property or purchased the property. Will you send us the information so we can factor it into our information base to make sure that we're more accurate in our assessment process? And if people would do that, then it would help reconcile the difficulties that we have in trying to determine full and true value based on limited data points of information.
So property owners could share that information.
Absolutely.
Because the only other alternative is that Alaska not become a disclosure state.
Right.
Is the path to that through the legislature?
The path to that's through the legislature, and it's been discussed from time to time, and the realtors, for one reason or another, have always opposed it, although they come out in force when assessments go up and say, wait a minute, you know, that's too high or too low.
Well, you're term limited, and you don't have another term to serve. I'm tempted to ask you what you think about that, but I'm gonna hold back, but I do want to hear, like, what you think would be the best solution.
You know, I think the best solution is when people are buying and selling property, if they're willing to share that information with the borough, it helps give us more information to sort of evaluate against the numbers that the assessing department has come up with their formulas. It allows us to calibrate those formulas and to be more accurate more of the time. There's still going to be problems, and when there are problems, there's a process in place where people can do file an appeal and go through an informal hearing. You can ask the assessor to send someone down and meet with them and talk about why you think your value is too high or too low. And then if you're still not satisfied, there's a board of equalization that you can avail yourself to in order to get to a final determination.
And are both propositions 2 and 3 propositions that everyone in the borough can vote on?
Yes.
Because Prop 1 is not, and we're just
Prop
about to
not.
Get there.
Prop right. 1 is not, but Prop 2, everybody will have it on their ballot, and Prop 3. Prop 2 and 3 will be on everybody's ballot. And the way it affects the cities is because the cities will see some additional revenue generated also. So the city of Homer will see some additional revenue. The city of Homer will see about $360,000. Soldotna will get $235,000. Kenai will raise an additional $433,000.
Into the city's coffers?
Mm-hmm. Yep, and it goes to the cities. And so it helps the cities also if it passes. And then the only one that has to take an action, because all of the other cities automatically, if the borough goes up to $1,000 on the cap, then all the cities do except Seward. Seward has to take an action by their council to adopt the increase up to $1,000. And the other thing that I wanted to point out with respect to that, the cap, is that we didn't apply it to residential rents because that is not a discretionary spending decision. It's something that residential renters have to pay every month. It's for their housing. And so we didn't want to double their tax every month. We just kept it the same. So it's only going to be, when it's applied to residential rents, it's only on the first 500 in sales.
And there's another question that came through info@kbbi.org. Is there any indication from the school district that if the tax cap Proposition 3 passes, they will consider undoing the new staggered school bus schedule, which has pushed the budget shortfall onto the backs of school families?
You know, that is, in my opinion, an inaccurate characterization.
And how would you characterize it?
Well, here's what it is. The reason that we were able to have two bus routes for a long time in Homer, where we don't do it anywhere else, yes, again, it's an inconvenience, but it's not done anywhere else in the borough. It was only done in Homer. And the cost savings associated with that are significant.
How significant?
Like $500,000 a year. That's significant. And in the past, we were getting 100% reimbursement from the state for pupil transportation. And so it wasn't a big issue for the local district to affect that change. But as we see different changes coming down, those things at the state level are being impacted, because if it goes to pupil transportation or if it goes to the formula program for education or wherever it goes, those things are being mixed and matched, and we're seeing some reductions in those. And so for the school district, it was a responsible thing to do. I get it that it's inconvenient for parents and families. I understand that. But that we have to do things. It's one of the things that government gets criticized for is not doing things in an efficient manner. And it is more efficient to run two routes with one set of buses than it is to run two routes with two sets of buses. And so as inconvenient as it is, it's something that is a responsible fiscal decision.
And Kelly Cooper, I imagine you're hearing a bit about all this from your constituents.
You know, I really am. The school board representatives in the Homer area, they went around the community and they met with families and they had those discussions. And people had many opportunities to be engaged and participate in that conversation. And so many families felt like they were blindsided and they weren't aware of it. But this didn't happen overnight. It was many months of the school board and school administration meeting with the Lower Peninsula. And as frustrating as it is for them, I do have to point out that we were the last community to have that staggered. So we did need to make the change, and it did make a significant difference in their budget. And as we talk about the school district and people's frustrations with, you know, how much our taxes are and how much we're spending, those are all things where we are tasked with being responsible in our spending and reduce spending where we can. And that was one thing that we really needed to do in the Southern Peninsula. So I understand the frustration. This is our first year. Our school board members locally, Mike Ilg and Zen Kelly, have been great about being responsive. And our family should continue to reach out to them and be involved and engaged in those school board meetings when they're in this area.
Well, there's just every time we get in on borough business, there's no time for a dance break. Let's forge ahead to Proposition 1. Are you ready to talk about that? Mm-hmm. First of all, who can vote on Proposition 1 and who cannot?
Only people outside of the city limits can vote on Prop 1. So it would be all areas outside of incorporated cities.
And I've been asked that question, why is that? The reason for that is that when the statewide ballot proposition passed, that was included in there, is that the cities have their own jurisdiction over the issue. And so for the borough, we have the non-area-wide powers, which means areas outside the city. And so this is only going to affect areas outside the city. If it were to pass, the cities still have the ability to license and allow for cultivation and retail sales. So the issue is not going to go away because there's multiple jurisdictions within the Kenai Peninsula Borough.
And what is the language of Proposition 1? Let's get there. Let's go there. I want to remind everyone, on the borough website, you can see the language of the proposition and then a position paper, a statement, an explanation, summary. And that's what they call it.
Yeah, summary. And there is in the voter pamphlet, there's a position statement in favor and a position statement against the proposition on banning cannabis. And it really, what it does is it bans cultivation and sale, retail sale of cannabis in the areas outside the city, within the Kenai Borough, outside the city boundaries.
And so I have read that Soldotna is, the city may be introducing a ban.
No, the city actually had a ban, and they just lifted it.
Okay.
And the city of Kenai has licensed facilities within the city of Kenai. It's already authorized in the city of Kenai. And then the other thing that I think should be talked about on the issue is that if it's banned in the areas outside the city, you know, there's a number of folks who have made investment, created jobs for people. That will, if this ban goes into effect, they're going to lose that. Now, they knew that going in, that was a possibility because their authority does exist that at any time the borough, through a vote, could repeal the ability to cultivate and sell cannabis throughout the borough. And so they knew that, but still, they have created some jobs and they have made significant investments. And so it's something that would be a huge impact on certain small businesses and families who have gone out on a limb and made investment in order
new
to try.
New businesses,
yeah,
too.
It's new businesses and new revenue.
It's about 200 employees on the borough that are involved in this industry. And the other thing to remember is those sales tax dollars are coming into the borough. And the other part of that would be, it's my belief that the regulation is helpful in keeping things out of the underground. you know, regulate it like alcohol. We don't have to participate in alcohol or cannabis, but, you know, it did pass, and we should regulate it like alcohol. At no time are we trying to make this attractive to minors. We all know that minors should not drink or partake in cannabis. But these are 200 families in the borough that 200 jobs in the borough that would be lost, as well as revenue that we would be receiving. So,
and I think it's important to point out a couple of things that Kelly touched on. One is the illegal market. Absolutely, there's an illegal market. I grew up on the Kenai Peninsula. Pot has been around since I was in grade school, although I didn't know what it was then. But certainly when I was in high school.
And it was legal.
Well,
in your lifetime?
It's always been legal in Alaska to grow your own.
Right.
Anyway, so the it's a privacy issue under our Constitution, so you can have, I think, 6 plants or something. You know, not that familiar with it. I just know that it's allowed for personal use. And so the issue's not going to go away. There's illegal grow operations there currently, and there always have been. And it's still going to be legal in some areas because the cities have their own jurisdiction. So I think what is important is you know, in the war on drugs, we have to keep in mind that adults get to make their own decisions and their own determination. And in this case, what we're talking about is regulating it so that you know that it's safe, that it's not, it doesn't have mold, it doesn't have other chemicals, it doesn't have other ingredients added to it that can be a threat to health and safety.
And Holly is on line one. Holly, do you read me?
Yes, I do. And I wasn't going to call in until the latest few minutes. So I'm unsure what the point is of asking the mayor his, I mean, essentially opinion. What we've been hearing is, you know, go out and vote no on one. So I would like to take the time to say why everybody should vote yes on one. This is a very difficult point to get across because the vote no lobby is organized, has money against with it, and is spearheaded by a local radio personality. So for those of us who will be impacted by this, please realize that it's an industry. So it's like having an industry right next to you. And this is an industry that does involve solvents that will, let's see, I'm going to quote a New York Times article from yesterday, which is now revealing 2 years later the problems in Oregon, Washington, and Colorado. And the problems include the stench. It includes fires. It includes a sentence of cash business robberies. It includes, and this one I would want to go light on, a certain type of people involved. I mean, that's...
What do you mean by you want to go light?
Because to me, that's a value issue. I'm simply reporting what's on this New York Times article yesterday, talking about the problems with neighbors now that they, 2 years out, have this industry. It's an industry. So it's like having an industry, which we don't know where
industry.
It's going to go, living next to you. And if I'm assuming it will be popular, so it can expand. And you shouldn't have to be having that when you've been living in an area for years. And that's just not a situation the mayor will experience. And none of this is being brought up.
Well, I appreciate your call, but Mayor Navarre, can you respond to that?
Absolutely. You know, I live here. I live on the Kenai Peninsula, and I currently live outside the cities. What you're talking about, though, is not isolated to this issue and having a cannabis industry come in next door. It's a bigger issue than that. And what it is there's been this, in my opinion, irrational opposition to responsible zoning issues, meaning that if you have a residential neighborhood in an area outside the cities, it's not really residential. You think it is, and it may be all houses and families, et cetera, but if there's a parcel of land right next to you, it can be used for almost any purpose. I run into this all the time with gravel pits.
No, let's not go there. Let's not go gravel pits. Let's not go dog kennels.
Stand by, Holly.
The problems with those stay on the property, okay? There might be loudness. We're talking stench. It's we're talking uses, water uses, and other resources that will have externalities that cross the property borders. Don't listen to me. Read the New York Times article yesterday. And we so taking care of this now instead of waiting 2 years outside. And essentially the mayor is saying, too bad you're not zoned. Well, we're not zoned.
Luckily the mayor is here, so we don't have to paraphrase him.
I'm not. You know, we have local option zoning so that in areas where people want to affect their neighborhoods and put enforceable conditions on it, they can. There's a process that you can go through that we updated just a couple of years ago. And so people can do that if they want to prevent industries that they don't like coming into their neighborhoods. Oftentimes people think that because they have subdivision covenants, they're covered. Well, they are. But they have to go through a legal process in order to do that. The borough can enforce subdivision covenants. We don't, and we can't.
So, okay, may I speak toward that? Because we're doing that here. And let me tell you what that takes. It takes sitting down and figuring out who lives all around you, because we are unincorporated. It takes somebody with the time and the money to send out the notices to see if there's even the interest, because there needs to be a supermajority before that's done. It takes a lot of effort that most people don't have. Hence, I hope all of you out there who, since you don't know what's coming at you with this, if Prop 1 fails, just vote yes right now and you won't have to deal with it. That's the best way to do it.
I really appreciate your call and thank you. I'm going to
get
back
offline
over to the
now, but at least the vote yes on one voice was heard for the first time. Goodbye.
Here's what I'll say with respect to all three of these propositions. I don't want you to vote the way that I encourage you to vote. I want people to educate themselves on all three of the bond propositions and make informed decisions when they go in the voting booth. So that's what I think people in a responsible society do, and that's what I think we should do.
So you've been listening to The Coffee Table. Let's wrap up Proposition 1. A yes vote on Proposition 1 will ban cultivation, testing of cannabis and cannabis products outside of incorporated areas in the borough.
And retail sales.
Proposition 2.
Proposition 2 is the heating, ventilation, air conditioning, the HVAC at the borough building. It's maintenance upgrades to the borough building.
And Proposition 3?
Proposition 3 raises a cap on sales from $500 to $1,000 and would have small impact, but it makes a big difference to the borough budget. And it's something that if it doesn't pass, other revenue sources are going to have to be identified. Now, most likely means a mill rate increase.
And Mayor Borough, Kenai Peninsula Borough, let's do the full title. Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Mike Navarre and Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly President Kelly Cooper, thank you both for being here today. One thing I want to make sure we say in the last couple of minutes is that I mentioned you were term limited. So this will be the last you'll be serving as Borough Mayor. And I want to thank you because over the years, I have found you accessible and informed and ready to engage every single time. I really appreciate your service to the borough and your accessibility and friendship with this station. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I have a long history with this station. I was telling the manager this morning that I actually helped put the roof on it years ago when it was being built. I was in the legislature. I was down here, and they were working on it, and I had some roofing experience, so I helped with it. And I appreciate those comments. I take my job and responsibility seriously, and I've had, I think, a good working relationship with the assembly, and that's what it takes, is ability to work together to solve issues and problems.
We certainly are going to. Is it on?
It is.
Oh, there
on.
We go.
You're just very soft spoken today.
That's not usually an adjective people use.
No, in fact, I was noting that myself.
So I too would like to thank the mayor. These last 6 years has been a very transparent government, which is extremely important to me. My 3 years on the assembly with the mayor has been very educational. He's very approachable. and very helpful as the Assembly makes their difficult decisions. So I want to thank you for your years on the mayor and look forward to seeing you continue in the public.
I can't resist asking where you're going to take all this knowledge and understanding.
Well, one of the things I want to do is I want to help with the state fiscal situation, because the state fiscal situation affects us here locally.
Do you mean as an elected official of some sort?
I don't think so. I think I'm going to be more of a facilitator and try to help with communications between different factions and try to build consensus for a responsible approach long-term. It's really important to our economy locally and to the state's economy.
And I hope there's a long vacation in there somewhere, too.
Absolutely.
All right, you've been listening to The Coffee Table. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. This is KBBI AM 890 Homer. Guests have been Borough Mayor Mike Navarre and Borough President Kelly Cooper.